Warning, the Catholic Man Show is about to begin. If you're looking for a dull, feel-good religion, or clap your hands, sit around the campfire, kumbaya, you've come to the wrong place. We are dealing with toxic levels of authentic masculinity. I would say good luck, but luck is for pagans.
Welcome to the Catholic Man Show.
We're on the Lord's team, the winning side, so raise your glass. Super pumped for the episode. Just things that are happening. We've got the camp out coming up, which I'm super pumped about.
Dude, I can't wait.
And it seems like that a lot of the things that we were hoping that would happen or kind of come to fruition, which is awesome as well.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Yes. Super pumped about that. Super pumped, we're finalizing our pilgrimage for next year.
Yeah.
In 2025, which I'm super pumped about, through Select International Tours. The only place to go for pilgrimages, whenever you're planning or going on a pilgrimage, Select International Tours.
They're awesome.
Yes.
And the reason we use them, because we talk to people who go on pilgrimages a lot. Almost I think everybody we talk to said go to Select.
Yeah. They've been doing it for 30 years, so
yeah,
they know what they're doing. So just super pumped. There's just a lot of exciting things happening. We have the Rosary Rally here in Tulsa that's coming up for St. Michael Radio, which I'm super pumped about. We have we just got a new radio station up and going in Bartlesville.
Yeah.
Which is super pumped, super exciting, new Catholic radio station in Oklahoma.
Fact, hey, welcome Bartlesville. This is the first episode of the Catholic Man Show being broadcast within the city limits.
Yes. So that's super exciting. We have, our fundraiser that's coming up, Theology of the Tower, which, the first Friday of December, which is super exciting. I don't know, this is a time of year that is just always cram-packed. Oh, we also have our Go Life fundraiser that we're going to.
So Go Life is a Go Life Mobile Medical. Great organization here in Tulsa. They retrofit RVs with ultrasound machines, and they drive around the different areas. They give free ultrasounds, and they just, they're a pro-life. They try to make people aware of, different other pro-life options, but the statistics are pretty overwhelming and kind of do the work for them, where I think it's 70% of the time, a woman who is abortion-minded, who is planning on having an abortion, when they see the ultrasound and see the image of the baby inside of them, 70% of the time they choose life. Mm-hmm. It's what a weapon.
Right.
A weapon for good, right? I mean,
yes.
So they also have an awesome fundraiser where you go and do
Sporting Clays,
which is the best. It's so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're in the Tulsa area, you can go, I think it's shootforlife.com. You can still sign up.
Yes.
The event is in Guthrie. We'll be there. So if you want to come, come on out, and you can lose to Adam and I out on the course.
With our buddies, Carl and Scott.
Yeah.
So
I won a shotgun at the event last year.
You did.
I still have not
shot it
even fired.
Can't wait for this week.
And we're trying to, we're going to go practice.
Yeah, at some point. Yeah. So I'm super, super pumped about that. I also ask in your charity, if you're listening right now, to offer up a prayer for the soul of Bishop Emeritus Edward Slattery, who passed away recently. He was the bishop of the Diocese of Tulsa in Eastern Oklahoma for, I think, over 20 years, or right around 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
Chicago native. He was the one who helped get Clear Creek started here in the Diocese of Tulsa, the FSSP here in Tulsa. He was a very holy man, a very fatherly figure. He deeply cared about his flock and their souls. That's something that I will always remember about him, is he deeply cared about you.
Yeah, that's, I think, what especially if you talk to the priests of our diocese mm-hmm. who knew him or who were ordained by him, that they all say he was a real father to them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, many of them looked up to him mm-hmm. more than just a boss or, yeah, he's the bishop, we have to do what he says, you know, but they had a real love, a real love for Bishop Slattery. He really was an amazing holy man.
Yeah.
I had the great privilege of being him being my spiritual director for many years.
He married you and Pamela.
He presided at Pamela and I's wedding.
Yeah. He actually did an interview with him on the Catholic Man Show years ago.
Yeah.
You can talking about sacred liturgy. You can mm-hmm. go back and if you just Google Bishop Slattery Catholic Man Show, you'll find it. But we talked to him about that and just a holy man. So in your charity, please offer up a prayer for him.
Other exciting news was my sister's wedding.
Yes, Tom and Becca, congratulations.
That was a great day. So if you're a single guy out there looking for an opportunity to become a part of my family, it's too late. Can't do it. The bus is full.
Until your daughters are eligible.
Yeah, but that's not the same thing. If you wanted to come like be right. like in on the brother-in-law status, it's too late.
Right.
But that was just awesome. Beautiful church in Stillwater, Oklahoma. The Catholic Newman's, or it's not a Newman Center, the Catholic student center there is amazing.
Yeah.
It's incredible. If you are in Stillwater, if you're going to be in the Stillwater area, you do yourself a favor and stop and visit the student center there. Gorgeous, mm-hmm. gorgeous church that, mm-hmm. you know, brand new. A lot of awesome things happening on the campus
yes.
of Oklahoma State University.
So let's raise our glass to Tom and Becca.
Indeed.
For their marriage and that they may have a bunch of children and just like populate heaven with a bunch of saints.
Amen. To Tom and Becca.
To Tom and Becca. And so today we're drinking from the Malt Scotch Whiskey Society. It's called Wafts of Smoke.
This is an English whiskey.
Yeah.
And
tastes like tea.
When we opened it, I even made a joke like, this is probably not going to be any good. I was wrong.
It's really good.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it's really good. It's from St. George's, the English Whiskey Company.
So it's finished in second fill ex-bourbon barrels. Very smoky.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the big surprise to me. I don't know what I expected from an English whiskey because, you know, I've never had one. I didn't expect it to be so smoky with, you know, some peat in there. It's very much like a scotch.
It is.
If you blind gave this, you know, like a blind taste test, I'd say it's an Islay scotch
mm-hmm.
all the way.
Very good though.
Yeah. Oh, it's fantastic. That's, you know, another great thing about the Scotch Malt Whiskey Society, who still does not sponsor the show,
mm-mm.
but it's a good way to, you can like, I don't know, you can't just go to the liquor store and buy an English whiskey.
No, I don't.
I mean, maybe.
Not where I am.
Around wherever you live, you have an incredible liquor store, but.
We're so happy for you.
Yeah.
another thing we did at the homestead or the farm, I don't know, it's not the farm yet, but. On my property.
Yeah.
Planted some trees. Planted some...
What'd you plant?
So we planted a apple... We planted four apple trees thus far.
Four different kinds? Or?
No, three different kinds. One's for cider, specifically made for cider. It's not a dwarf tree. It's
okay.
like a full tree made
okay.
for cider.
Uh-huh.
We had another one that's basically like golden apple trees.
Uh-huh.
And it's a semi-dwarf tree.
All right.
And then we, two...
That's what my apple trees are.
Semi-dwarf?
Yeah.
And then I'm blanking on the name, but it's like crisp apples. Like
I have a Pink Lady and a Red Delicious.
Neither one of those. I'll have to go back and because I don't remember. But anyway, it's really interesting because the full tree, so like the dwarf and semi-dwarf trees mean like basically that they're not going to produce as much fruit. You can typically plant them.
They're not going to get as big.
Right. And you can typically plant them closer together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't require as much space in between.
Mm-hmm.
But the one for the cider, you had to have 30 feet either, you know, around the perimeter, like 30 foot radius.
And you got it. It seems ridiculous when you're planting. Yeah, because it's little trees super far apart. But, you know, otherwise in 10 years, you realize I have made a mistake.
I made it. Yeah. So we actually made a decision on one of the property where our big pond is. We're not going to use that for grazing for years.
And is this in the back or the front?
The front.
And I don't know what you did, but I, having thought about this a little bit more, I think you actually want to add another like 5 feet between the trees to stop squirrels' ability to go from tree to tree.
Mm.
They have to get down to get to the next tree. And it discourages them because that's, you know, I have a big pear tree.
Mm-hmm.
That's my big enemy. Is I lose like hundreds of pears to the squirrels. Mm. And, you know, this pear tree I have is thousands of pears. So it's not that big of a deal. But they don't eat all of them. What they'll do is like, oh, as soon as one is ripe, they'll take a bite and drop it.
Right.
And now it's like, so they don't actually eat hundreds. They take a bite out of like hundreds, right? And so I try to.
Super frustrating.
I try to get rid of them. So anyway, if you can put space, even an additional 5 foot.
That's a good idea.
Between your trees, you know, in 20 years, that will help with that problem.
Yeah, that's a good point. Well, luckily we did the max amount. So hopefully that.
And you can always trim them. You can trim the trees to put a space. So.
That's right.
We'll be right back.
Do you feel like God is calling you to go on a pilgrimage? Well, for the last 34 years, Select International Tours has been leading pilgrimages to holy sites all over the world.
And you want, when you go on pilgrimages, Dave, you want to make sure you have the best hotels, you're touring with the best guides, and every detail has been addressed.
And that's exactly what you're getting with Select International Tours. So for more information, go to their brand new website, selectinternationaltours.com. They have been a sponsor of the Catholic Man Show for a long time now. Even during the COVID pandemic, they were still sponsoring our show. A lot of other tour companies were really shutting down. These guys were consistent. So go to selectinternationaltours.com to find out more information about all the great pilgrimages they offer all over the world.
Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. So I did something in the last few days that I want to share with the people.
Okay.
Because I didn't know about this.
I'm nervous.
And it went so well. I think people ought to know about this. Okay.
Oh, you're going to like, okay. There's like three people out of everybody that's going to care about this.
No. The way things are going, this is going to be everybody. I mean, it's like, okay, my refrigerator went out. The way that they make, and I talked to one of my friends who's an appliance repairman, and he was like basically complaining about the way that they make appliances now, that they basically they won't last more than 10 years. Whereas like if you have a refrigerator from the 80s, it's probably just fine. Still working.
Still running.
Like the day you bought it.
Yeah.
Because it like the coils are all made out of nice thick copper, and they, you know, over time they made those coils thinner and thinner, the evaporator coils. And then they started making them out of aluminum because it's more efficient, but it also, they wear out. And then now they've started introducing all these electrical components into everything.
Right.
So anyway, mine went out. It was going to cost me $800 to $1,800 to fix. Or I could go buy, I'm just going to have to buy a new fridge because you can go to a new one for $1,600. Or, you know, if I was going to replace this one, it's going to be like $3,000.
Mm.
But I fixed it myself for like $25, maybe $30. I went and got a bullet piercing valve and put it on one of the copper tubes in the back. And I just filled it full of Freon, which appliances run on the same Freon that your car runs on. You can just buy it at Walmart. It's super cheap.
Mm-hmm.
So like, keep this in mind. If your refrigerator goes out, it's worth the $20 to put some Freon in it. Because in my case, it worked great. And now I don't have to spend all this money on a new fridge. Or the guy who came out, he's kind of pointed me in this direction. He's like, look, I can only do certified repairs. That's all I'm allowed to do. But you might, there's a YouTube video. You might look at it.
Yeah.
I'll see you later. So,
anyway,
thank you, sir.
Again, the three people who need their refrigerator.
No, dude, so. I'm telling you, like, you talk to somebody who bought a Samsung fridge within the last 5 years.
Oh, yeah. All of those are.
And you tell me whether or not they've had to have it worked on. Okay. And it's not just Samsung, it's all of the companies.
But mainly Samsung.
But you know what? But also, they sell the most refrigerators. And so, anyway. I was so excited about this. I was like, people got to know.
Dude, the things that we get excited about now, 8 years into the show versus what we were 8 years ago.
Like, yeah.
If 8 years ago, David Niles heard that story and how excited you were about it, you'd be like, I appreciate the story.
Hmm.
Don't know why you're so excited.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Right.
But even 8 years ago, if there was something that was going to cost me $3,000 that only cost me $30...
You'd have been excited.
I would have been just as... Actually, I'd have been more excited about it.
Had less money. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So tonight, I want to talk about a four-letter P word that we talk about all the time in the Catholic world. No, we don't talk about it all the time at all. Because it's not pray.
Mm.
Okay?
I see what you did. How long did you have to think about that intro? You had this planned. That's a planned intro. I like it. I thought it was good.
I actually didn't think about it for very long because I totally ripped that off of Scott Hahn.
Ooh, I love ripping stuff off of Scott Hahn.
Yeah, he...
Do it a lot, actually.
He made a podcast basically on it. Yeah. he gave a talk one time and he made this offhand comment about the importance of play.
Uh-huh.
And how as fathers, like, we always want to, like... He always gets people asking him about, like, how do I teach my children to pray? How do I keep, you know, like, all these questions about the faith, as one does with Scott Hahn. And he gave them all, you know, very good answers. But then he said, but don't forget the other four-letter P word that we don't talk about in the Catholic world, which is play. As a dad, it's very important that we play with our kids. This is something that I was reflecting upon recently, especially with our move and all the things that we have been going on. I've, you know, realized, as I have many faults, but one of the faults that I have, you know, that I've had recently is I don't feel like that I've played with my kids very much. You know, I haven't done a lot of things with them just to play.
Mm-hmm. Importance of guarding your Sunday.
That's exactly right. You know what we did today? Let me tell you what we did today. In the backyard, I took the mower, I mowed it down really, really hot, tight, and then... 15,
like real low?
Real low. And 15 yards out, I made a little circle, and then 30 yards out, I made a little circle with my mower, 60, 90 yards out with my and made little circles, and then made a little tee box, and all the family went outside, and we just chipped onto these circles. And just sat there and hit golf balls together.
Uh-huh. Nice.
A lot of fun. All the kids did it. Everybody liked it. Haley was really, really good. She's very athletic, so not surprising. But
someday you'll teach her to golf and she'll beat you.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I'm not.
Someday.
Yeah. If I teach her.
Especially the way I've seen you walking around today.
Dude, I'm hurting. Anyway, so like I wanted to intentionally, you know, play with the kids today.
Yeah.
So that's what we did.
That's great.
But it was a lot of fun because we didn't have, it wasn't like keeping score or anything like that. It was just like, we were just out there hitting golf balls together.
Yeah. Just for the sake of doing it.
Right. But I want to talk about like the mystery of play. And so there's this book out there by a Catholic theologian professor who's recently passed away. I believe you were there when we actually listened to it, one of his talks. But his name is Mitchell Kalpygian. That's how you say it. Kalpygian. Mitchell Kalpygian. He wrote several books. The book that I'm holding in my hand is The Mysteries of Life in Children's Literature. And so he talks about the importance of literature in children's life and in a lot of play. Like, he talks about the importance of play. So I'm pulling some from that. I'll try to link it in our show notes to check it out. He recently passed away not too long ago, but we had a chance to listen to him, I believe, at one of the conferences here in Tulsa that happened. He actually signed my book when he was here, which was really cool. But he talks about play, and he says, you know, play is the opposite of work. It's the antithesis of useful, productive activity, right? And so here's a quote.
Right away, it sounds like it's almost just like leisure. Yeah. Right.
It's actually a part of leisure.
Okay, yeah.
So here's a quote that he says. He says, play is a liberal activity or pursuit. That is something that is an end in itself rather than a means to an end. Something that is loved or enjoyed for its own sake rather than some ulterior reason or ambitious goal. Like other liberal pursuits, such as the enjoyment of beauty, the delight of friendship, the joy of learning, the experience of love, the worship of God, play represents a form of activity that is innately good and desirable for its own sake. Okay, so like I think that kind of sets the battleground in which we're going to kind of talk about the mystery of play. So, because it's very interesting that it's for its own sake, but we'll find out that it actually produces a lot of good. So this whole mystery of you're doing it for its own sake, yet it still produces these things in you and in your children that are very useful, very right. productive.
So it's sort of like leisure is often restful. But if right. you're trying to rest, then actually you can't have leisure. Because
it's almost like this paradox.
Right, like leisure is done for its own sake. It's not like in order to achieve anything.
Right.
Right, so if you're trying to achieve rest, right. then actually you're not... I keep wanting to invent the word leisuring. You're not leisuring. I think it makes sense. But anyway, so it's very similar to that.
Right. Yeah, one of the things that I was thinking about,
like if you're trying to hey, this will be fun and we can practice something, it's like, oh, that's not play.
Right, because
that's just very creative practice and right. it's fun practice. Maybe you just like were very had a fun way of doing it, but it's not play.
Mhm.
Because you're actually trying to achieve an end.
Yeah, it depends
instead of doing
depends
something
on what the intent is.
Simply for its own sake.
Right.
You know?
Depends on what the intent is.
Like, cuz if it's truly play, like what you're saying, like you're not keeping score, you're not even trying to get better at it.
You're just having
fun. You're just doing it for fun.
Right.
You know?
And maybe one of the fruits of that is actually getting better at it. In fact, that's what Cardinal Newman...
You might get better at it, but that's not what you're trying to do.
Right. In fact, Cardinal Newman talks about this. He says in the Idea of the University, the phenomenal book that he wrote talking about basically this the classical way of learning, right? Mm-hmm. The good is always reproductive of more good and prolific in its very nature. Good is not only good, but reproductive of good. So it's almost like
it's fecund.
Yeah, it is. It's almost like, you know, holiness is attractive, you know, and virtue begets virtue. You know, so like if you do something virtuous, it's very attractive. It makes you want to continue doing other virtuous things, and it also is right. contagious.
Yeah.
So other people see it and they're like, hey, what is, like, I want to do that. That's why Mother Teresa was able to, you know, like, make such a statement by just walking down the airport terminal. It's because it had nothing. She was just walking, basically. But mm-hmm. she, because of her holiness, people literally saw her. And some people would, like, they changed their lives.
Yeah, the people would be, like, weeping as she went by.
Right, which is... has
Gosh,
to be.
I want that so bad.
No, I was just going to say, it had to be so terrible.
No, you know, dude. Like, no. It would be awesome. But see, I'm wanting it in order to achieve an end, so I'm never going to get it.
So when we get back, I want to talk about how play can create culture, it can create art, it can foster celebration and festivities, which is also part of leisure.
Yeah.
Which is like a side result of play, but all good.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Catholic Command Show. We're talking about the mystery of play.
When you say mystery, do you mean something that is hard to understand or something like when we talk about the sacraments?
No, something that's hard to understand. Well, the outcome of play, it actually yields fruit that is not sought after at the beginning, like to do so.
Gotcha.
It's like almost like this paradox, right?
Because, you know, we've heard of the sacraments as mysterious, but not because we can't understand them, but we cannot plumb the depths of their meaning.
Yeah, I understand. It's almost like a paradox of play. Maybe.
Indeed, indeed.
So, you know, children, like this is how children learn, learn how to do things is through play at the beginning, mm-hmm. right? You see this very, like, naturally. Your daughters, I come over a lot. They're playing house. Mm-hmm. They're playing different things that they are actually, like, learning how to do things.
Right.
My boys are outside all the time sword fighting. They're all the time, like, playing like they're hunting. They built a teepee the other day. They're doing things that are play.
Yeah.
But it's they're learning.
Children's play, whether you're boys or girls, obviously boys and girls play very differently, but they always start off the same way. Okay, you are this, and I am that, and this is what we're doing. And therefore, these are the rules. Okay, so whether we're
here's a scenario.
You're Captain Hook, and I'm Peter Pan.
Right.
Or, okay, you're the mom.
Which we know that would never happen.
And I'm the dad.
You're obviously Captain Hook.
I was never Captain Hook, and you know it.
You're a review.
Okay, we don't have to say who we were. All right, but I was never Captain Hook. I would never stoop to such low depths.
Nathan was.
Oh. Is that? Yeah. Anyway, before we like throwing out names to whatever the innocent or however that disclaimer goes. It's still the same. The thing about play is, you know, it's always establishing these ground rules about who we are and what we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, you're absolutely
right.
Which
there's like, if you just think about that, these kids, what they're doing, it's like, who are we and what are we doing?
Mm-hmm.
There's like a really beautiful, mystery. It's, you know, it's lovely to watch children play anyway because it's full of delight. But when really think about what's happening, I find it even more beautiful, just because it's like, oh man, they're searching for their vocation, they're like finding their place in the world right here in this like little play mm-hmm. that they're doing.
Imagine the creativity that takes place too, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Of them, like, creating the scenario in which we're going to live in,
right? And it's like one way that they are made in the image of God.
That's
in
right.
That they are creating.
That's right. You stole. I was going to talk about that at the end, but you're very. Accurate. That's
sorry.
Okay. Yeah, but play like whets their appetite for like adventure, whether you know for especially for boys, but it also like creates this appetite for wonder, which is like you know the beginning of philosophy, right? It's like the beginning of understanding like what philosophy is. It helps their imagination. They discover new friendships, and it has a love for outdoors because a lot of times they're going outside to do things, which we all know is a good thing for children to be doing.
It's always better outside,
right? And so it's just if play actually helps children and forms them in what their vocation is. Like into the vocation that they're called to, play is actually very important.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important for the children, but it's also important that you're doing it with them.
Right. And it is because for them, play is actually their work, but it's not work. Okay. It is their work because it's how they develop and it's how they learn. But that's the wonderful thing about children is that even though this is their work, it isn't. Because there's just simply doing it for its own sake, right? And all of the results are just happenstance,
right?
You know,
yeah. So here's the mystery of play. It's like mystery of play is like that. It's both useless and useful.
Mm.
right? That a child doesn't play in yeah. order to like sharpen their intellect or to acquire knowledge about nature or have these retreats in the past of learning about history, which my boys do all the time, you know, about different battles in history and things like that. Mm-hmm. Or they don't love, you know, or like this love of life. It's yet in the very act of playing, in the pureness of it, the mind grows, the heart expands, and that their spirit becomes adventurous. And so it's just like it goes to this beautiful paradox that it's useless yet useful. And it reminded me of how do they actually learn these things to be able to play, right? So they go outside, they battle all the time. They do different battles from history and they play out the battles. Mm-hmm. Or Star Wars. Those are the two, basically. Either Star Wars battles or history war battles.
Obviously.
And so it reminded me of how do they, in order for them to learn how to play like that, they have to have the imagination to do so, but they also have to have the knowledge of the actual events that took place
right.
in the past. And recently, I think on Matt Frad's podcast, he had Dr. Peter Kreeft on. And one of the questions that was asked to Dr. Peter Kreeft was like, how do I help my child learn how to grow in their vocation? And Dr. Peter Kreeft, in his brilliance that he always does, because he always gives these answers
he turns into a grandpa, the better he is getting.
I mean, these very simple but profound answers, right?
In like this voice. Yeah. Oh, the voice.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop fanboying over Peter Griffin.
Yeah. But he said, very simply, leave really good books around the house.
Yeah. Yeah.
He said, boys want to have heroes. Girls want to have somebody to look up to. They want role models.
Mm-hmm.
So in order for them to have these things, who are they going to look to? Who are the role models they're going to look to?
Right.
And
I would also add, especially it depends on the age of the kid, but you need to know those stories. And when a father says, let me tell you the story about a hero, and then you go and you tell about Don Juan of Austria,
mm-hmm.
okay, for example, or Blessed Franz Jägerstätter, mm-hmm. okay, these stories
Sobieski.
Yes, exactly. The fact that it came from their father, right? They are already, it's like, nope, dad loves this guy, I'm that guy. Like, I'm on team dad.
Right.
Right? When you're young boy. Yeah, And that lasts...
Happens with granddads too. So if you're a grandfather listening, is a game for you.
Totally. And in fact, I think granddads get even a longer
leash.
They get a longer run, a longer period.
Yeah, totally.
A bigger window. So, leave the books around, but also be ready to tell the stories of greatness.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Make sure to do it.
And one of the things that, it clicked with me as we've been reading the Iliad and the Odyssey over, Homer's... talks about this. He talks about the importance of play. Like he mm-hmm. actually talks about how humans, it's a very human thing to do, to play. Like they had, war games. They had they had things we're stopping the war for a minute. You guys go do your thing. We're going to do our thing and we're going to play games.
Mm-hmm.
And it's it's rejuvenating. It's life, it's restorative, but it's just very human.
Yeah, and it doesn't really ever end, okay? So adults play. At least I think a well-formed adult does. You can certainly have a curmudgeon. You can become a curmudgeon who never plays. But I think a well-formed, well-ordered adult still plays. It's not make-believe anymore. But we still do things that try to help us ascend to mm-hmm. something greater. Right. Okay. So, whether you're playing games, Pictionary is kind of a silly example, but where you're doing things that are fun as an adult that still like
it restores the innocence.
Yes, it does. But it like Cupid. The thing I'm thinking about is that, like it. You kind of in the play ascend to something like temporarily or in like a imaginary way, even though it might not be actually imaginary, right?
Yeah, I mean, it, again, it restores the innocence of you. Like right. You go back to kind of a child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, which is good.
Which is a good thing.
Right? Like, we've talked about this on the show. I mean, about
Jesus talks about that.
About maintaining your innocence as an adult man.
Right.
Which I think, at least for me years ago, was counterintuitive. That, look, I'm an adult man. Okay. I shouldn't be. I don't want to be innocent because then I won't be as mature.
Right.
Almost as if those things were, against each other. But they're not.
That's right. And I also have found that as I've allowed my children to play, you know, we try to have order in our home, right? We try. We're doing the best we can. We have structure. You have these rules. You have these chores. You have like these things that you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But play gives like this freedom and joy that kind of breaks through the rules, so to speak, where they can get to do anything they want.
Yeah.
You know, because they're playing.
But once again, there's play always follows the rules. Like right. The kid so from the beginning, here's who I am, here's who you are,
right.
Here's
but
what we're doing.
It actually feeds into, it gives them a break
right.
from their chores and like order in life, but it actually reinstills like that thing.
It's a freedom.
Through play.
But freedom always.
Through obedience.
Through obedience. That's right. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Catholic Man Show. I'm David Niles here with Adam Minahan. We're talking about play and its role in your spiritual life.
And just the domestic church, really. Like, yeah. And just your life.
This is one of the things I like about being Catholic, is that, you know, we have a very good understanding of the formation of the person
mm-hmm.
being in tandem with the spiritual life, right? That the more formed we are as just people, the better disposed we will be to, the supernatural. Because, you know, we order ourselves properly, therefore we're more ordered towards divine realities.
Yeah, if we participate in that which we are made in the image and likeness of, namely God, that we're able to partake in his nature more and more.
Yeah. And I think that that is lost in a lot of our Protestant brothers and sisters, that they kind of view there's like the spiritual side of them. There's these things that they do, and they just don't have the they're just not as connected, the natural and the supernatural that we have in the Catholic Church, which
is so good.
It's good, yeah.
One thing that it's a fruit from play in my house that we learned.
Okay.
That I want to share is, and this happened about three, maybe, yeah. So it's 2024, 2019 was COVID. So, you know, about 4 or 5 years ago.
2020 was COVID, right?
2020, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was 2020.
End of, yeah, 19 to end of 20.
So I was in the hospital in the beginning of 2020.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like the first case in Tulsa.
Okay.
That was in March of 2020.
Okay. So
I only have that. I usually cannot recall dates like that, except for the fact it was my half birthday, which was the Feast of St. David, and was the day my lung healed in 2020.
Yeah, you got off way too easy this last Lent. Anyway, I don't want to go into that. But this happened.
You mean nothing cataclysmic happened to me?
Is right, what you mean? So this happened about 4 years ago. We were, you know, in COVID, and it was cold. It was the winter time. My kids were kind of stir crazy. We were inside. We couldn't really go outside very much. It was very cold, but then also like no one was going outside because of COVID or whatever. I don't know. Outside air is worse.
Look, stuff was, it was yeah, dangerous.
It was all dangerous. And so I was having there was one night we were sitting at the dinner table. I was looking around and I saw like all my kids were being very rambunctious and just needing to do something. And I was looking at Haley and I said, like, we have to play something. We've done all the puzzles. We've done all the coloring books. We did that, like, you know, 2 months ago. Got to do something. So I mentioned at the beginning of dinner that night, it's like, guys, we're going to play the dad game after dinner. Now, when I made this statement, this decree, I did not know what the dad game was.
This is excellent.
But I knew, like, I got to have...
Every dad has been in this situation. It's like, probably mom looks at you and gives you that look of desperation.
Right.
And it's the look of, like, I need you to come up with a solution for my, like, this is hectic. Mm-hmm. Save me. Mm-hmm. And you do something. I have a surprise in the other room.
Yeah.
And you're like,
crap, what is the surprise?
What is it?
Yeah.
And you, like, go and, like, fling a blanket in the air. It's like, what is under this blanket? And you're still like, what is it?
Yeah. But I had to create this excitement, right? I had to create this thing for the kids to look forward to.
Yeah.
To see, like, something to do.
Yeah.
To behave well at dinner. Let's say our prayers and let's have this dad game, right? And so throughout dinner, I'm sitting there listening to the kids talking about the day, and I'm, like, eating and trying to figure out, like, what the heck is this going to be? And so here's what I came up with. Again, it's cold outside. Can't go outside. Need competition. I have a bunch of boys. We all set our backs up against the sofa. Everybody had a penny, and they threw the penny as close to the fireplace as possible, which is warm because it's cold outside. Like, we were having the fire going.
Obviously, I have a fire.
Who can throw the penny the closest to the fireplace without it touching wins that round. And,
right.
And then I start it, and then mom starts it the next round. Luke, Jude. Anyway, like, I just kind of had to wing something, and it just so happened I had pennies in my pocket, which is really weird.
That's
to have
weird.
Change.
Yeah.
I think I, like, had cash one day, which is really weird. And,
well, credit, you know, like, COVID was spreading through credit cards.
Yeah. And it was the chips, I think, there was an issue.
You know what, dude? Someone actually told me that. Like, it's spreading through the credit card terminals at the gas station.
Yeah. Okay. So
I honestly had someone tell me that.
So anyway, I had cash in my pocket. I had change. And so I gave everybody a penny, and that's what we did. Okay. Well, it turned into a super competitive, fun game, because we had we did have.
If you have boys, anything can be a competitive and fun game,
right? And we had a spreadsheet with everybody's name and who won that round, and we ended up going like 40 rounds that night.
The first night.
We did that every night for
I actually remember this phase in your family.
In my family, yeah, we did that every night. 30, 40 rounds, because everybody would keep going and we'd get so close and, oh, we got to get 5 more rounds so that way I can possibly beat dad or mom or, you know, whatever. Anyway, like, it phased out as springtime came and, like, we were able to go outside.
But it lasted a long time.
And then the next wintertime, guess what?
It came back. The dad game.
The dad game came back. And it kind of became a tradition in our family. It became something that we did during the wintertime.
Do you associate it with having a fire?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it being cold outside,
mm-hmm.
And this is like what we do after dinner.
Play the dad game. So what's this? Do you put backspin? What do you do?
No, you do... Just like a cornhole toss.
Okay, well, you can't, because there's different cornhole tosses. You can't say that.
Well,
so it's like a frisbee?
The correct way.
Do you do the frisbee spin?
Yeah, okay. So anyway, it became a tradition in our family. Now, I think that traditions in families, like organic traditions in families, are lacking. I just don't think that families have a lot of, like, real traditions in their family.
Well, this is because the television is always on.
Yeah, maybe so.
I mean, most...
I don't have...
So you and I have committed to a kind of family life that does not involve television.
Right.
Right. Not that I have a television.
So do I.
But
I didn't buy it, but I have one.
But it doesn't, it's not on it's basically, it's not for the kids.
Yeah.
The television, on very rare occasions and very special occasions, we will watch. Like the other day, mom was gone, and I, as dad, said, tonight we are having pizza in the living room and watching a movie. And it was like,
that's the best.
You had, it's like the, you had like the elation in their eyes.
Right.
It was awesome. But so let me ask you this, because I remember the dad game. I remember one time I was at your house.
Yeah.
And Luke and Jude came up to me and said, do you want to play the dad game? I remember this. And mm-hmm. I was like, I heard you talk about it. And but I was still like, wait, what is the dad game? It's like, come here. They beat me. Because they had like hundreds of like throws.
Hours worth of throws.
They had the muscle memory already.
Right.
But I want to ask you about play with your kids. Because mm-hmm. there are two very different opinions here. So I want your opinion. Mm-hmm. Do you let your kids win? Mm-mm. Okay, you say that. Maybe at the penny toss, you don't let your kids win. Do you ever let your kids win, or is dad
intentionally?
Yes, like where you know, you're playing them in basketball, you know, and they're seven, and you like throw the game, and you let them win so that they like feel good about it.
I give them little wins,
but you don't let them win the game.
I'm not like
dad. Like is
yeah. I always build them up, mm-hmm. but I always want them to be striving for more. And I think that in order to strive for more, you have to overcome adversity.
Yeah.
And so in order to overcome adversity, you have to be put in the position of losing. And so I want my boys, I want my kids to be able to understand that, like, it's like there's people that are better than you always. There's mm-hmm. always going to be people better than you, but you have to strive for greatness anyway. You have to keep fighting back. So, yeah, I don't let my kids win in games, but I let them. It's like I don't let them win the war, but I let them win battles.
Yeah, and of course, this actually isn't a question so much about play as much as it is about competition, because play in pure form, it, you know, strictly speaking, has no winner.
Mm-hmm, right.
Right. You're just playing.
Right.
You know, but so often play, you know, especially if you have boys, but girls too, there in naturally evolves this competitive element. And I think this is a good question that a lot of men have to deal with. So like we've been playing more chess here lately in our house. Mm-hmm. And I've just told the kids, look, I'm never going to just let you win. I just want you to know that. Okay. But that doesn't mean I just like crush them.
Yeah, right.
You know, it would be a very short, you know, it's like,
well, three moves every time.
They would never learn anything.
Right.
If I just like just pounded them into the ground.
Right. You're called as a dad to establish your kids, you know, for the future. And to establish them, they have to overcome adversity. They have to be able to know how to like get back up again.
So, this is all we've got time for on the radio. Go and check out the podcast, because I want to talk about something I have on this topic I've recently changed my mind on. But
it doesn't happen very often.
No. We're on the Lord's team.
The winning side.
So raise your glass.
You've changed your mind on something recently?
I have. Okay. It is. So
this is very interesting to me.
When we went to the Catholic Comedy Conference this last year, you know, we were talking about cartoons. I have changed my mind on my opinion about cartoons. So,
okay.
my opinion before was that cartoons ought to participate in the great story. You know, that there is good and evil.
Yeah.
Right. And that's like, and that the good needs to win. Right. And that I don't agree with anymore.
Hey, why?
So if you remember, we had Paul Rugg on our show, mm-hmm. who
part of the Animaniacs.
Yes, yeah, and I forget the big cartoon that made him
Animaniacs.
It was Freakazoid. He won like a
Emmy.
Emmy. Yeah, I was going to say it's not Academy Awards because that's not right. But yeah, so he, hilarious guy. And he was on our podcast and his point was that no, cartoons ought to just be funny. They ought to just, no. And he was very polite. He was on our podcast and I was kind of presenting the idea of, well, I think that they should participate in this great story, you know? And like I said, he was very polite and didn't just outright disagree with me on our own podcast. But I have come to change my mind and I agree with him more now that no, there doesn't need to be anything. There is no end. Like for a cartoon, it should just be sheer, just for the sake of the joy, just for its own sake. It doesn't need to teach anything. We're talking about like little kids' cartoons. They should just be for the goodness of the cartoon, right? It doesn't need to teach that there is something or whatever, right? It will. That's the thing. It will. If it's done well, sort of like all leisure. Like leisure never is ineffective. It's never sterile. It always ends up doing something for you. Okay? But that's not why you do it. And I think that I've actually been thinking a lot about this and that I think Paul was right. That like
the, okay, well, give me more. You can't just say
okay, so like more context.
Yeah, because like well, so here's what I want to know is like you can you just make the claim like the story can just be what it is. It's like okay, why? Like you like tell me why
yeah.
you feel that way.
Okay, very good. Let me just give some context to that conversation, just very briefly. We were talking about what had happened in cartoons over our lifetime. You know, Adam, you and I, we grew up born in the 80s. So like we raised in cartoons in the early 90s. Cartoons were still good, but kind of on their way out of being good, so to speak. Because there was this idea of...
Thanks a lot, Nickelodeon.
Edutainment. That we can educate and entertain at the same time, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's where you get the idea of Baby Einstein. Personally, when our kids, we watched Baby Einstein with our kids. I think I got some stuff out of it because it's like, oh, wow, I didn't know that about this painting. And I think I enjoyed it way more than the kids did, as silly and ridiculous and embarrassing as that may sound. But the kids are not brilliant because they watched Baby Einstein. There's nothing wrong with Baby Einstein, except that it's intending something less than the greatest good, possibly. So he was pushing back on this idea of edutainment, okay? Mm-hmm. And so I was saying, well, I think a good cartoon ought to participate in this great story, right? About, you know, the story of all humanity, of all life, this battle between good and evil, and that good, that evil exists, and that good triumphs, right? And I was thinking that because all of my favorite cartoons that I was thinking of, they seem to have those elements in them. Wile E. Coyote, Tom and Jerry, right? Like, it's easy. The list is long, right? But as I've thought about it, I think that those kinds of things just end up happening. And I think that what you ought to do, even with a cartoon, is just simply make a funny cartoon. And the way to make a funny cartoon often ends up being through these elemental truths. Right? It's just funnier if you have one person that you're really rooting for and then a person that is like, oh yeah, it's funny when like the anvil drops on the guy who's trying to eat the mouse. You know, like, yeah, because we're rooting for the mouse. And so when the cat, something happens to him, it's like, yeah, that's even funnier. But I have come to agree with Paul that the telos, like the end that you should pursue in a cartoon, is just the funniness, just the joy. And then let there will be things that you will get other things out of it, sort of like leisure, right? Leisure is almost always restful, not always, but almost always. But that's not what you're trying to do. You're trying to just have leisure. You know, you're pursuing the activity for its own sake. And the fact that it's restful is just accidental or kind of just results, but it's not what you're shooting for. So I think in cartoons, if you shoot for joy, you will get other goods along that come along with it.
I'm definitely not sold on that.
Okay. That's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, definitely not sold on that.
So you think, now, did you agree with me before when I said that it should participate in the great conversation? Okay.
I think that in order for it to be like worth, I think the reason why you named off like the great cartoons is because it participated in the great story. I think that you talk about Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd, Tom and Jerry, Wild Coyote and the Roadrunner. Like, the reason why those are all great cartoons is because it participates in the great story. The cartoons that are just funny for its own sake may have a hit, but it doesn't stand the test of time. And this happens all the time with story. I mean, this is like what happens with stories in general. This is why The Lord of the Rings is always going to be a great story. This is why, the fad of today of 50 Shades of Grey is not going to be a great story. Is not going to stand the test of time.
Yeah.
There are certain stories that are great stories. This is why The Iliad and the Odyssey are great stories. It's because it participates in the great narrative and stands the test of time. I think that cartoons in general, like, there are great cartoons because they participate in the great story. There are other cartoons that may be a fad, that may be great, that may be funny, but they don't stand the test of time, and it's because that genre or that it has a shelf life.
Yeah. And I hear what you're saying. My what I would offer in response is that there are no doubt hundreds of other cartoons, Christian cartoons, who do nothing but participate in the great story.
Mm-hmm.
But weren't even good when they came out.
But they weren't good, but it wasn't because they were participating in the great story. It's because they were
fair
poorly
enough.
Done.
They were likely poorly done. But you see, I think it's because once again we're talking about a form of play,
mm-hmm.
and like leisure,
mm-hmm.
and so it's like it comes down to what ought we to be aiming for, and then the way you get there, if done well. You end up like bringing all these other goods along with you.
Mm-hmm.
Because you realize in order to do the thing you're shooting for,
right?
You know, joy, leisure, like just like a.
But what? Okay, so you use joy. I mean, that's different a lot for to use joy with cartoons is a little confusing, mm-hmm. because a lot of times when you say joy, you actually mean, especially when it comes to cartoons, just being funny, right?
So
I think
okay,
there's
well,
a difference there. Because like what you could have is you could have a cartoon that just sits there, has a animal making fart noises the whole time, and kids would absolutely think it's hilarious.
Like the Minions. It's kind of Minions.
I don't know.
You've never seen the Minions?
No.
Never mind.
But that's not going to stand the test. That's not going to stand the test of time.
And I think this is a good question. What is the end of a cartoon? Like, what is it that you're trying to do? Because obviously, I think Paul was right. We're not trying to educate, right? We're trying to be funny.
No, see, I actually disagree with that premise.
Okay.
I do think that we try to educate in some way, shape, or form. Any type of consumption.
So does that mean cartoons are not leisure?
No, I don't think I would
you
go
see what
there.
I mean?
No, but I think anything that you consume, any form of entertainment or anything that you're consuming does educate you, does form your opinion.
It will. See, that this is what I'm trying to get at. Is like, yes, of course it will. But is that the goal? Is education the goal, or is the goal something else?
Well, what is the goal of The Lord of the Rings?
I think it's just the goodness of the story. I don't think, in fact, I feel quite sure that Tolkien was not trying to educate anybody. He was just simply telling the best story he could.
Oh, I don't know. I think that Tolkien was trying to educate. I think that he was trying to educate him about Gandalf and about Bilbo and the struggles that they had and the human aspects that you can relate to these struggles and these triumphs and these downfalls. So, and the reason why it's so good is that you
can... So let me just back up. I just want to make sure I understand your position. So you think Tolkien's primary objective was to educate about these characters?
No, I think...
Because that's what I'm asking about his prime... I know, obviously, he can't tell the story without teaching about the characters.
Right.
But I think his... What I'm saying is that I think his primary objective in writing the story was simply the goodness of the story itself, right? That, like, there are... He wants to tell a good story that is worth hearing.
I agree
and
that.
Like and worth knowing, and that.
Okay,
you know,
so you take that mentality and apply it to cartoons.
Yeah,
which is seemed like that was not what you were saying earlier.
Hmm. Okay.
Because like you were just saying like make it funny just to be funny. It's like no, that's like because you could do something crude or crass or like you know kind of asinine.
Yeah. So I don't know that that is actually funny. You know, you will get laughs from little kids, but does it, you know, and it's like, okay, well, if that's my standard was Acme actually funny, you know, dropping anvils on people and stuff, kind of is still crude and crass in its own way, you know, not quite biological.
Sure.
Humor, but I don't know. I really don't know. But I just wanted to say
okay,
I have
so
changed my mind.
Well, you just pivoted again.
No. I have changed my mind from my position before. I do now more sympathize with Paul.
You don't know. Well, you had a firm stance to now it's you're not sure.
Well, I'm not sure how those Acme cartoons fit into.
Well, like, I think you should like throw that out. Like, let's talk about. Like generalities, okay. Like not just those specific cartoons.
Yeah, so I think that this is my opinion at this moment.
Okay.
That in a cartoon,
mm-hmm.
you shoot for the I'm using joy as a standard. Maybe that's the wrong standard.
Yeah, because I don't think joy actually, I don't think a lot of joy is brought in cartoons.
Well, for the kids, there are.
No, I think happiness. Like I think it's joy okay. is much more in depth. Joy is because you can be miserable and still be joyful and still have joy.
Can you?
Of course.
Okay, I'm willing to accept happiness then as a.
Yeah, of course you can be miserable and still have joy. Alternative. Like the joy is in Jesus Christ. You can be suffering, and be miserable. But have that oriented towards Christ and redemptive suffering and have joy in it. That's what the saints did.
Okay.
So
I'm willing to accept happiness. That's fine. So if happiness is the goal, laughter, really, I think it's laughter in a cartoon. You're shooting for laughter.
Which can really lean towards like being frivolous, which is actually a vice. So like again, I think like there's this... I don't know. I feel like I'm way out, like speaking out of turn here because this is not something I've thought about a whole lot, nor am I an expert in any means. But I have this.
You're asking me a lot of like detailed questions when my position is very general. Okay.
Well, but it's like I have to. I didn't understand what you meant by it.
Yeah, yeah. So
because
let me just say generally.
Okay.
Okay. Because I feel like the more detailed questions you ask me, I'm just going to end up making mistakes. Because this is that's why I said I don't know. Because well, bro, I don't know. Are you asking me? I just want to say generally.
Okay.
So I was thinking that, okay, no, the great conversation should come first.
Yes.
But now I think that just like in leisure, how you get these, you get all these goods that you're not shooting for, but they're inescapable.
Okay.
You know, I think that the great conversation ought to be one of those inescapable goods that come along with.
Yeah, because there's
the cartoon.
Good leisure and there's like not good leisure, right?
So is
like,
there not good leisure?
Oh yeah, I would say absolutely. There's not good leisure.
Okay, so I see what you're saying. I think I would say actually that's just not leisure. It's not that it's not good leisure. It's just simply not. You know, if you're doing something that's like, you know, you're just vegging, for instance, you're just watching television.
Yeah,
you don't,
yeah.
I wouldn't say it's. Since it's a semantic thing, but
sure.
I would say it's just not leisure instead of not.
Dude, there's like probably nobody leisure. Listening to this anymore, which
maybe,
is fine.
No, there's people.
But
still,
I'm enjoying just talking about this.
So
like,
anyway, I think this is just my general philosophical 1,000-foot view.
Okay, give it to me.
That we shoot for those like, you know, we're going to make a funny cartoon that's for kids, okay? Because it's for kids. We're not talking about like eloquent literature, okay? We're talking about making cartoons for kids. We want to make these kids laugh.
Okay.
And if we do that well, and if it's being written by an author who is a well-formed author, right?
Okay.
Because if we're talking about things that are going to last, obviously there are certain cartoons that have stood that test of time. So like these authors are good examples. They're going to do it in such a way that bring other goods with them.
Mm-hmm.
But that they weren't actually trying to tell the story of good and evil, but that they, because they were well-ordered in the way that they went about their task, that they naturally found that this was the best way to make these children laugh, right? Or to write a good cartoon. And so that great conversation, it just comes with it because it's one of the goods, along with hopefully many others, that accompany the end product, but just like leisure, when you're not actually trying to achieve these other things, you set out to do just something for its own sake because it was just a good thing to do.
So here's a question for you.
Okay. Don't be specific.
you're using like, it should be funny just for funny's sake.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Can you use other things outside of like substitute funny for other things?
Okay.
Like I feel like that could lead to a lot of like slippery slope, like not good things, like entertainment for entertainment's sake. That's not good. You know, or like suspense just for suspense sake. Ooh, that could go horribly wrong. Horror for horror's sake. We've seen that's not good.
Well, sure.
And so
I think there is a presumption that that the funny that I'm talking about is that it is a good worth pursuing.
Okay, so again, if you're this is the argument of like what is good, like this is almost like a morality. Like we're actually talking about like the philosophical aspects of morality of like, oh, there's a good. Oh, does that mean that there's a hierarchy of good? Oh, well, where does the good come from? It's like, so I don't know how you escape the great narrative, meaning like good and evil, because you're using the words like this is good without like saying, oh, well, but you're trying to divorce this is good from what is good and evil.
So,
Do you understand what I'm saying?
We're talking about kids' cartoons, right?
Talking about kids' cartoons.
We're not talking about like.
But you're saying like, okay, this
adult cartoons.
It should be funny for the sake of funny. Well, okay, well, is this funny or this funny? Oh, this is more funny. It's like, oh, okay, so there's a standard of funny. There's a hierarchy of funny. Well, why is there a hierarchy of funny? Because the funny actually leads to a good. It leads to a, like, so, okay, well, if it leads to a good, what kind of good is it leading to? Is there, like, and how close is it in relationship to good, you know, the highest good? And so, like, I think that you actually can't escape this. I don't think you can actually divorce it.
Yeah. I think that's what I'm saying. That you shoot for the goodness of the cartoon. And that my point is exactly that the great narrative is inescapable. It's one of the goods.
That was the point that we made originally.
No, but originally I was saying that actually you ought to aim for that good. And that actually it should be the intent of the cartoon. And like that is like that's the metric that we're going to like in as much as you participate, you know, just like leisure. It's sometimes it comes down on a razor's edge. Okay, like were you trying to achieve rest? Okay, because if you were actually trying to achieve rest, there's nothing wrong with resting. Okay? But if you were trying to rest for rest's sake, like, and, you know, like, oh, because I need rest, right? I'm trying to, like, achieve a goal here. Then actually you're not, that's not leisure. And there's nothing wrong with resting, okay? You need rest mm-hmm. because you've worked hard, mm-hmm. okay? But it's just not leisure, okay? And it can sometimes... It's on a razor's edge, like what was your intent in mm-hmm. because two people can be doing the exact same thing and an observer might not be able to tell a difference between these two people except one was like really just like hoping to rest and the other just wanted to look at the stars. You know, one person said, oh, this will be nice to like rest. Yeah, sure, the stars are nice, but I just like need to like lay down. And we're from the outside, you can't tell the difference, right? So these two people might have different intents. Mm-hmm. They're, you know, and so one is having leisure and mm-hmm. one simply isn't. Mm-hmm. They're both, nothing wrong with what either one are doing. So it's your intent in producing a cartoon. It's a kid's cartoon. Obviously, it's supposed to be funny, right? Because, you know, when we're talking about making cartoons for four-year-olds, that's what it's about. It's about making these four-year-olds laugh. And so the intent needs to be in the right place. And obviously the best way to do that is to bring these like these truths about reality with you. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to really make them laugh, if you really want to do it the best way, you're going to find the greats have found that this is the avenue to do it. And you end up, like what I've been saying, bringing these other goods with you because it's the best avenue to do it. But it's not what you were shooting, you know, like, but still the intent was, let's make these kids laugh. Like, let's okay. bring joy into their life. And the best way to do it, because we're talking about the great cartoons. And so I think at this point we can say definitively that they do participate in this great conversation. But they didn't set out trying to make a cartoon that participates in the great conversation. They said, hey, let's make some kids laugh. And that was the and like that was what they wanted. But of course, there are inescapable truths. Mm-hmm. There's an inescapable content of reality that just naturally brings you around into these other things. So like when we sat down with Paul, I said, no. Like, no, you have to, the reason it's funny, that's what I said, is like, no. You ought to aim for these, you know, truths about reality, about good and evil or whatever, right? And at that, and I thought that's actually why it's funny. But actually, I think that you just, and that actually still might be true. The reason it's funny is because this is something that's so ingrained in reality about this good versus evil, right? And it's not as funny when the good guy has the anvil dropped on him, right? It's actually more funny when Coyote takes the brunt of the pain, right? Mm-hmm. But the goal of the writer, just like the person pursuing leisure, shouldn't be, oh, we need to achieve ends. We need to achieve these things. And that's like, no, no, no. It's just about, like, let's just be funny, you know, like just for its own sake, because this will make the kids laugh. So, like, once again, it's kind of a razor's edge distinction, but that's what I've changed my mind about, and I could be totally wrong still. But that's all I've got.
About that.
I can only do what I've got at you know, at the moment. Yeah. So
it's fun.
Yeah.
All right.
But it's, you know, I thought it was a good thing to bring up because it's very much play.
Absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
Like a cartoon is a very interesting form of play because you're kind of participating. It's a passive, it's very passive, right? Because you're just watching it, but especially for kids.
Yeah, I would not actually say cartoons are play.
Kids tend to take a more...
I actually don't think play and entertainment... I think entertainment and play are two different things.
Yeah, but kids wrap themselves up in things more than we do as adults, you know?
Of course. Yeah. It helps form their imagination, just like, you know, stories in general. Yeah. Like, it helps them play later.
I will say this, because I agree. Not play. But there is something playful about it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Cartoons. Hilarious. I like it.
Fair enough.